My name's David Clayton. I was the one that went down to Tulsa to live. Go on.
Okay, well, this is Reginald Clayton there. I went down to Tulsa to live.
Perfect. Thanks
yeah,
very much.
Yeah, but he turned the house over to us then when he went down there to me.
And which house was that?
That Tulsa house.
Tulsa house.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Yeah, because you might get some of it twice.
Right, this,
good morning.
This is Reg Clayton talking at the moment. We used to live at a barn cottage, Shelton Lane, Canley, when I was 3 years old. And my father worked on the George Bostock then. Years went on. I was probably 15 then when I left school, and I went down to see George Bostock for a job, and then he set me on as doing the cattle and things, you know, in the barns and that. I'll put you over to David.
This is David Clayton. I'm a bit older, so I started work before Reg, but when he said he was 3 years old, or when he was 3 years old, the German prisoners of war cut his hair and he screamed the place down. But his father worked at Totley's farm, and then we moved down there when I was 19. My father had retired then.
Could you give us a bit of background to Tozel House Farm? How does that connect to the University of Warwick?
Well, Tozel House Farm, I think the acreage was 232 acres and 75 acres that joined it, but of course it went with the farm at Gibbet Hill and all the others together. But there was 2 yards at the back of Tozel Farm where they used to keep the cattle in, and they used to bring the cattle in the autumn and fatten them up over winter to go to market, and there was about usually between 70 and 80 in there. There was some little pens where we had a few cows and calves in, and they used to have they used to go to the market and buy store cattle, which stopped out all winter. They was fed outside and they'd be fattened up the following winter. But my job was, I was a tractor driver. I didn't have much to do with the cattle. I helped out when they were TT testing and things like that, but...
There was then. This is Reg talking again now. There was TT testing at that time then, but when I was probably about 4 or 5 years old, my father there used to give me the boostings, the first off the cow. And they wasn't TT tested or nothing then, they was wide open to everything. And time went on then, when I was feeding the cattle and that, I was probably about 16, 17, I fell ill. And I had about 4 or 5 doctors come to see me there, and it was diagnosed that I had brucellosis off the cattle there, but my father there gave me in them days gone back, like, you know, because it was wide open, as I said, for everything, like, you know, so now they are TT tested there, and it's a lot better, you know, to put you back over to David.
The cattle at the time, when they were TT tested, all the cattle sheds had to be washed down with caustic soda.
Yeah.
And we'd done this when it cold days, and you do it with a stirrup pump, and wash all the walls down with caustic soda. I had some rubber gloves, I had my gloves on, and I put them by the fire at dinner time to dry, and they all shriveled up. Because of the caustic soda, I expect.
Mm.
Can you think of anything that you would recognise today in and around the university campus? Is there anything that's stayed the same, and is there anything that's significantly changed? I imagine there's quite a lot.
Yeah, but
if we walk along the side of the river You know where the Turish farm used to be? Well, if you go on the left of that, the parts of the old engine still there, which was, there's posts and rails in there which we put in. And gate posts and things like that. You can walk around, you can always find all sorts of things.
When I was 21, at that tree on the campus there, but David was just been on about, when I was 21, they done a party for me because I was 21, and I knocked a nail in, a big nail in that tree, and it's still there, and the tree's grown over it.
Where can you find that 21, tree?
When I was 21.
Whereabouts is that tree on campus where you hammered the nail in?
Yeah,
that was down at Total Farm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, the drive come down, the buildings, there was one row of buildings on the left, and because we put a light on the tree, they thought it was a car waiting to get out. So they waited there for 20 minutes and there was nothing there. But I don't know whether you realise it was a big place, because when you would go in the hall, to go from the hall, the front door, across the hall to the other door, it was 10 yards. And then when you go in that room, and then there's out of that room across the kitchen was another 10 yards. And we had 16 rooms altogether.
You could put a piece of wood on it that long, on the fire, in the hall.
But the chimney in the hall, that was the warmest room. But the chimney in the hall had got the steel rings in where they used to send a boy up to clean them out.
We had a,
either that or put a chicken in the fire and light the fire. And
we had a chimney fire one day there and it was going just like a steam engine. Oh, we didn't
it did set fire once, yeah.
Didn't go.
The hall's not here today, I would imagine.
No.
I can't see why, you know, they knocked it down there because it was a dry place. I know why they knocked it down then, because it, you know, the kids kept going through the windows.
Well,
the
Coventry Council gave the university ultimatum, either put somebody in it and do it up, or knock it down, because somebody's going to get hurt, because they were going through the windows and out through the roof.
I see. And has anything been built there now, where the hall used to be?
I don't know whether there's any buildings, because they're accommodation blocks down there at the moment, aren't they?
Living quarters, aren't they?
Well, living quarters, accommodation.
Well, I must tell you about
that story. That's a posh area.
I must tell you about this story then. George Bostock lived in that house for a while before he moved to Gibbet Hill.
Before we went there.
And one day there, because he had a gypsy working for him on the farm. And he asked his gypsy there to get a ladder out there and cut some of the branches off there because the wind was knocking the windows.
Well, the house was three stories high and the tree was higher than that.
Anyway, he gets the ladder out there and then he gets halfway up, because you can climb anything, this gypsy. And he says, "Hey, gaffer," he says, "I can't go anymore." He said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "There's somebody up here pushing back, I'm telling you, I can't go anymore." Oh, he said, "You better come down and leave it then." And then time went on then, what he just told you a few minutes ago there, that the top of that tree fell out about 10 foot, wasn't it?
Yeah,
this is where you cut it off with a chopper.
About 10 foot, and it was 9-10 inches wide, I suppose, but it was one clean cut.
They say
that's
all
what we couldn't understand.
All the living quarters down there, they said they was all open, you know, so I don't know. But, it must have went somewhere, didn't it?
That sounds interesting. Can you tell us some of the stories about the living quarters being haunted?
Yeah. Well,
what do they say?
All the ground floor windows have got shutters on the back and an iron bar dropped down behind them. So you were totally secure when you got in.
Yeah.
And when they knocked the house down, from the floor to the top of the bedrooms, the walls were 3 foot thick solid all the way. And I don't think that was built for a farm. I think at the time it would be Lord Lee's.
Mm.
So whether it is one of his relations, I don't know.
I know the monks used to be there at one time, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, you're going back a long way before that.
Oh,
time.
I know, yeah.
Well, when the monks were there, they was also across Cryfield, because they had the windmill over there.
What time are we talking here, roughly?
And down by the river, right across Gibbetill Road and the other side, they used to have osiery beds. And osiery beds, coppice willow, which they use for making baskets and things like that. You probably know, but...
when we in the harvest time there, when they were putting the sheaves, when they cut the corn, when they were doing the sheaves into the Dutch barns, used to be a bay, that, you know, we'd put them on the bay like, you know. And David was on the bay there with this other fella, and he sticks a fork between his fingers here, but down to about an inch and a half.
He come round with it like that, straight down between his fingers. It hurt. He wouldn't pull it out.
You've had about 6 weeks off work,
I told my arm like that to my side and get the fork and pull it out.
You had about 6 weeks off work for that, didn't you?
No, it wasn't that long.
Was it?
No.
Well,
after
a long time,
after the first week, I'd had enough, I've got to go back.
How many chapters did Bostock have all together?
Well, at one time?
Mm. Of course, he used to work for him for 56 years.
Mm. Was this
a long time? He only worked for him for about...
He had five tractors, a JCB, and a teleporter.
I only worked for him for about 6-7 years. No, he was...
I had my gold medal off Princess Anna's, yeah. Only.
Mm. What was that for?
That was
a long service medal. It was from the Royal Agriculture Society. They had nothing to do with it.
Mm. Long
if they had, I probably wouldn't have got one.
How long is a long service?
You could have it any time after 40 years, but you could only have it once. Well, I had it in 2002, and I'd done 42 years then, and I finished there in 2009.
Glutton for punishment.
When I finished, I was a lot fitter then than I am now, because you'd be going all the time.
Yeah.
What's the biggest change that you've seen? Well, land here.
The biggest change on the farm was everything was changing over from manual to machinery. When I started work there, he had 11 men. Well, when I finished in 2009, there was two of us, and they still got the same acreage. Oh. I mean, they hadn't got any acreage here, but they still got the same over there. But all that they'd got over there, they bought.
Yeah, but
and he never had any money. All the time I worked for him, he never had any.
Oh, no, no. Millionaire twice.
But the time I was working for him, I'd done a lot of the tractor work, and I had 14 brand new tractors. 14 altogether. And the first one I had one was down at Towsell, and I had that one for 7 years. That was the first new tractor I had, and he got it from Merley's in Warwick. He wanted a new tractor, and they said, well, we've only got this one. He said, that'll do. He said, Ford, this is Ford's, they want this, the soft, they're coming to demonstrate it. He said, forget them, I'm having that one. And he stood there while they loaded it up on a lorry and brought it. And that tractor was a lot better, because Ford's had built it for the soft, I think. But after a time we had to change it onto another tractor because, well, I had it for 7 years, but after that we had to go on the tractor with live hydraulics. It had hydraulics, but they weren't live.
And did you stop farming when, and was it, did you sell the land to the university?
All the land up here belonged to the corporation.
Okay.
Well, when the universities first started, the first bit of land they gave them cost £94 million. And they just gave them that.
Wow.
And I don't know whether you know, but when they started the university, they started at the top of Gibbet Hill, where they, all the sheds where they, the gardeners had got, that was the farm. And they put buildings up there. And it was when Harold Wilson came to power, If it, the building hadn't been started by the end of the month, they got to wait 3 months. So they come in there one night with a bulldozer, just bulldozed the edge up until he couldn't push it anymore, then went round it and started again. But there were taters in one field, corn in the other, horses in one field, cattle in the other, and they're just going everywhere. We didn't even know they was coming.
It was McAlpine just started it.
No, McAlpine's were down here.
Yeah, no, they started the library block, didn't they?
That was the first building down here, yeah, the library block.
Mm.
They had 650 men, McAlpine did.
And in the winter of 64, wasn't it? The hard winter?
No, they weren't here then. They didn't come
till... What was the hard winter then? What
67 were the first ones that worked here. We didn't leave here until 2000, till 69.
So you were still farming the land up until that point?
Was that the hard winter?
Meanwhile, the university was growing
on
the land as well.
They had to light bonfires under the coolers and that to thaw them out. It was that hard of winter.
Depends how big a bonfire is, you might not have a cooler.
Yeah, Bostock, didn't he? He used to camp a lot of his taters there, and up the side of Towson Drive, it was, what was that, about 500 yards, 600 yards long?
It was quite long.
Yeah, with taters, like, you know.
You have a camp, you know, the pointed camp. You put a straw on, then so much soil, then later on you put some more soil on and cover them over the top.
And if it's hard winter, you put some more on.
You can't do it all at once, because if you do, the taters would rot.
Yeah.
Because they'll stop sweating by the time you put the second lot on.
They sweat, you see.
And the tater camp, they used to get a ton to the yard when they're putting the taters up.
And when did the students start arriving? Were you still farming the land when students started arriving on the campus? And did you supply any of the food to the university as well?
No. I was ploughing the field not far from here before they built those other shops and things. I was ploughing it with a tractor with no cab on it, and there was snow under the edges, and I stopped the tractor in the middle of the field and sat on the ploughing, and the students were walking along the road and they kept stopping and pointing at me. Thought I was mad. But there's a steam pipe goes under there that supplies the university. Mm. And when you took the ploughing off, you could see the steam coming out of the ground. So I've got put warm my feet on that.
Yeah, it's cold, you know. Really cold.
But the one at Gibbet Hill, where they started, they pile-drived it, the pillars, and then put the building up. And the building, the first buildings they put up were made of concrete, and they got concrete slabs, and there's two pins to hold each one up, and they weigh 4.5 ton each. Well, one of those pins is going to rush through in time.
Mm-mm.
And what if one goes, the next one's going, all the weight's going to go on that.
Yeah.
And what are these pins holding up?
Yeah.
What building are they holding?
Well, the building in Gibbet Hill, I don't know what they do with them now, but... They won an award for some buildings they put up for the workers, the professors and things. Mm-hmm. And I went in there, because my watch had stopped, to find out off the builders what the time was. I couldn't even find the door to get out, and they won an award for putting them up.
We had to feed the cattle, you know, Swedes and mangles and things like that, like, you know. And they had to go in the field there, and when it was so solid, I mean, you had to go and get the Swedes out of the ground to cut them, chop with a chopper, like, you know. Well, if you chop your finger there, it wouldn't bleed. It was that cold.
But, well, the chap used to work there, and when he went cutting mangles and Swedes, because if you cut a mangle, you grab it by the top and throw it, and then bring a knife down like that.
If you're lucky,
so he finished up over there. Well, every morning he'd come with a bandage round his finger in case he hit it.
Well, he went to the hospital, didn't he, there, and because he cut it badly one day there, and he said to the nurse said to him, "What have you been doing?" He said, "I've been chopping mangles." "I've been mangling," that was it.
Yeah, he'd been...
He'd been mangling. He said, "How are you mangling there? How did you get down in the mangle?" you know, when you turn like...
It wasn't until he told them he was cutting swedes they understood what he meant.
No.
I mean, you go to a place like Walsgrave Hospital, they've got no idea what you're talking about.
No, no. Well, they wouldn't have, would they?
Do you have a favourite story from the, your time on Tosil Farm or sort of while the campus has been growing here? And
the one I remember is before they built, before the university started, I was still at school. I was 14. Well, the children in our class, there was girls and boys, and they said the holidays were too long, too boring. I said, I haven't got time to get bored. I arranged for three lads to come down to our house, and I'd take them round the fields and round to the farm. When they got there, there were 10 of them. And we came across the field towards Tosil, and there's a little field, it's not very wide, but it follows the shape of the river on one side, and all that was in there was a young cart horse. And I used to go down every morning and take an armful of hay, and he'd come down the field at you, full gallop, and when he comes down by you, he goes round you and stops, and you give him a pat and walk away. Well, these kids went across there, they didn't know that. And there were two gates out of the field, and the first gate by the house is only a little gate. You got four or five kids climbing one over the top of the others to get off of the gate. And one girl, she stood in the middle of the field and just screamed her head off because the horse was coming straight at her.
Yeah.
And I was stood by her and I said, don't do that because you'll make it worse.
Yeah,
she stopped doing it. We went back through that field afterwards, and she was the only one that was prepared to go across the field.
He had three horses on the farm. One was Tubby, Clive, that was the stallion. Tubby, Clive, and what was the other one? Dolly. Big, fat horse-like, you know, and when you put him in the car to get the tubes, he used to lie down in the field, he wouldn't go, wouldn't pull it. Lazy, that one, wasn't he?
No, well, it all went back to the time when I started. The horses were still there, but I had nothing to do with the horses. But they changed from that to tractors and then went on to what other machinery, didn't need so many men, and all just went on and on.
Yeah.
Now, you got machinery that... Well, we finished up with an unmanned tater harvest, and we're lifting 110-ton taters a day. And nobody on it. You operated all off the tractor.
Yeah. That's how things progressed, you know.
Progress. Is that what you call it?
You mentioned some features that you had put in, such as fences and posts and that kind of thing, that are still there now. If say students coming to the university now wanted to find some things that were still left from before the university was built and when it was a working farmland.
Yeah, but
where would they go to? Can you recommend some things from?
Yeah, but
we walk around the campus quite a bit, don't we? There and have a look around where the fields are and that, you know. But,
to walk along an edge and say, well, I remember putting that in.
Yeah.
But if you take somebody else and you say, I put that in, it don't mean anything to them.
No.
You know.
That's right.
But some of the old trees are still left.
Yeah.
But years ago, when we were down at Tosil, we used to get terrible fogs down there before they put all the houses in Coventry on smokeless fuel. But it used to mix with the fog, and it was that dense you couldn't see your feet.
Wow.
And I came across the field, and I've been across that field hundreds of times, and I couldn't see where I was. And I suddenly looked up, and there was a big oak tree in front of me, and I said, you're supposed to be the other side of the field.
And it's easy done.
I come out from there, it went round like that. I didn't even know, and I thought I was going straight across.
I'm just wanting to interrupt you for a second, but if I can.
Hang
right?
on. When you come in the field, well, I walked back along the edge because I knew where the tree was, and the field had been landed up, which was a primitive way of draining, I suppose.
About Henry first.
Well, I was working with George Boshlock's son up Gibbet Hill doing a job on one of the sheds, and his uncle came in and he said, "Here, son, I'll give you this. If you're ever short of money, you can use it." And it was a gold cup he won for Stallions in 1936. He said, "When I won it, it was worth £21,000. And he brought it in a carrier bag. They got no regard for money. He had four houses built up Westwood Heath, because that's what they call the Eight Houses now. But the other thing I was going to tell you was that up Gibbet Hill, there's a big pit up there, sandstone pit, and the sandstone came out of that to build Westwood Heath Church, amongst other things, because it was all Lord Lee's. On the corner, when you're going up towards the church, there's a little blacksmith shop on the corner, and behind that there used to be a great big hole where they used to get the clay out for making drain pipes and bricks. And there was another one halfway up Gibbet Hill Road where they used to do roof tiles. Because it was all Lord Lee's then, he got everything out of his own land.
And did Lord Lees used to own all of the land here then?
Yes, Lord Lee owned right across the Broad Lane.
Mm-hmm. Who did it pass to after Lord Lees?
The corporation bought it.
Oh, tell them about that cupboard in Tossil there with the fair in the Bonnend.
Yeah, there was a corner cupboard in one of the rooms, and it had got posters for different cattle sales and fairs on it, and one of them was for a cattle show in Sponend in 1841. I went down Sponend, but I couldn't find where they'd been.
Old Davis, the clerk of works, wanted that, didn't they?
Well, I don't know who had it.
No, I don't.
A lot of things disappeared. I mean, the front door disappeared, and it was one of those with the square studs in, back and front. We moved down to Total Farm, and of course there was a wall garden there, and we got a tractor in there and got it all sorted out and planted up, and the blokes that were working down there was going off in the soul.
And when were you living on Total Farm? From when and until when?
We went to Total Farm, what would that be? Fifty-eight or fifty-nine.
Yeah.
And we left in 10 years. Well, 2069. Because they wanted us out before that. Mm-hmm. They accidentally knocked the telegraph pole down at 4 o'clock one night.
Cut the water up and things.
They cut the water pipe and supplied the water to the farm. They sent two men to mend the pipe.
Dead of winter.
And with ice, they froze it both sides and then filled the hole up. And the cattle had been in the sheds. Oh. They got no water for 3 days.
You can just imagine it.
And they were ready to go over the wall to the river.
Some of them did.
It wasn't safe in there because they were just charging about.
Mm. Mm.
So.
And that's with the university developing on the farmland at the same time, was that?
Yes, because McAlpine were here then, yeah.
Yeah.
McAlpines were the first started here, then Arabins come, I think, after that, because they put the eating plant up down the bottom with the steam pipes in. That's how I knew where it went.
Mm. Do you get back onto campus very often?
Pardon?
Do you come back onto campus very often?
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah, have a look round.
A lot of one punch a tree.
you scratch your head and say, "Where are we now?"
Yeah.
When it was all agriculture land, like I told you, everything was there.
A lot of memories there, you know. Mm. A lot of memories.
But along the side of Gibbet Hill Road, there used to be a big parkland there, and there were trees all over it. Well, it was Deer Park, I suppose, originally, and Bostock had all the trees blew out. No, they'd been cut down before, but he had all the stumps blew out.
And was Bostock the person who owned the land while you were working here? Or?
Well, it's a corporation land, but George Bostock rented all the ground off him.
I see.
And he got these people to come and blow the stumps up. Whether the corporation paid towards it, I don't know. But when we come home from school, we used to get behind his van, and we knew he wasn't going to blow his van up. And he set this explosion. Well, he started walking up the field, and the explosion to go off. He was as deaf as a post. Bits started dropping round him. He turned around and looked to see if it was all right. But there was one down here, not far from the side of Gibbet Hill Road. He put 16 sticks of dynamite under it, and it never moved. And he come back to his van. I've had enough of this. He said, I'll fix it. And he took a full box of dynamite, 32 sticks of dynamite, and put under this tree. He'd already loosened it, and it went straight up in the air.
The whole tree?
Yeah, the whole of the tree. There must have been 5 or 6 tons of it, because all the roots and everything. And the wind caught it, and it went across Gibbet Hill Road and landed in a neighbour's field, the other side. So he rung him up at night and said, can we have our tree back?
Bostock had, it was insignificant there, but he had four children, two girls and two boys. Billy there died of a brain tumour when he was 15. And Henry there, the one I was brought up with on the farm, well, him as well, he got drowned in the sea.
Oh, gosh.
He was 41. But the trouble was there was more going on than they told us about.
Yeah, I think he had a goiter in his throat.
But I know that for a few years they wanted him to have that scene too, but he wouldn't have it done.
Yeah.
But the year that it happened to him, I said to him, we want a new mower next year, because this one you have to mend it every morning. I mean, you're in the field going through the grass 3 foot high, and that's 6 miles now, you can't see what's there, you haven't got time. And he said, well, he said, it'll do this time. He said, won't be my problem, I shan't be here. And 3 times he said that to me before he went, because he went on holiday in September.
And you mentioned two other children as well.
Yeah.
What happened? What
Well, one of them was a school teacher. Well, as far as I know, she still is. And the other one married, the oldest one, she married a chap, and they went up to Carlisle.
That Margaret?
Yeah. But
Margaret, Poppy, Billy and Henry.
Well, and they called her Poppet. That's what her dad used to call her, Poppet. And she... We went to a do anyway, they was there. And she said, nobody knows my real name, you know. I said, well, you're wrong there. And she said, you don't know it. I said, your name's Ellen Mary. And I said, nobody knows that, do they? She said, no. Don't tell them. So obviously she didn't like it.
Yeah.
And that's what her dad used to call a poppet, because when she was little, I expect.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thanks so much for sharing those stories with us.